Hear that? Believe it or not, summer is just around the corner. Luckily, Armor All, America's most trusted auto appearance brand, has what your car needs to get that perfect summer shine. Plus, now through May 31st, we'll give you $5 for every $20 you spend on Armor All products. That means car wash pods, protectant, tire shine, you name it. Find out how to get your $5 rebate at ArmorAll.com. Armor All, less work, more clean. Terms apply.
Now let's face it, everyone needs insurance. So when you need to renew your cover, the on-the-grid hot tip is to give our mates at City Rural Insurance Brokers a call. City Rural have been dealing with the insurance industry for years, and they've got more than 50 years of industry experience. Need insurance for your business? They'll sort it. Are you a landlord and want to cover your rental properties or investments? They're your people. Or are you like me and need professional cover in case you say something silly on a podcast? City Rural can sort that too. They did it for me and it was super easy. The best thing of all is that City Rural are, like you and I, motorsport people. If you've watched car racing this year, you might have even seen their logo on cars like the legendary Richard Mork Super Ute, among others. They know our game and they know the people that follow it. So support the people who back our industry. And when you need to throw a new setup at your insurance cover, drop Andrew and his team at City Rural Insurance Brokers a line and they'll fix you up. Head to cityrural.au or follow the links on theracetalk.com. City Rural, better cover, better service.
Delivering all the news, the informed views and just telling great motorsport stories since 2003. Powered by theracetalk.com. This is On The Grid.
G'day everyone and welcome to another episode of On The Grid here on mypodcasthouse.com or on the Radio Show Limited's RS1. Thank you for joining us. A big show coming your way this week. Craig Lowndes sits down with Mark Walker to have a chat about life, supercars and lots of other things as well. Dale Rogers goes and does a deep dive into this brand new Ford electric van that has broken the speed record of Mount Panorama, fastest closed-in car that's ever been around the mountain. We'll find out all about that in just a tick as well. And then Mark Walker and I wrap up the week in sport and look forward to the first Formula One Grand Prix of the season coming up in Bahrain this weekend. We're Richardless today, but that's cool. We'll kick on right here on The Grid.
You're listening to the latest from around the motorsport world. On The Grid.
All right, joining us now is a man who needs no introduction, so he's not getting one. Craig Lowndes, welcome to On The Grid. How's it going, buddy?
Very well. How are you going?
Not too bad. It's good to have a busy start to the racing season, but the cat's out of the bag. A bit of news from your end. You're going off to do the Fink.
Yeah, it's been a little while since I've actually driven off-road. Last time was over in the Australasia Safari, so nice to have an opportunity to go back. I've been to the Fink race many a times, and this opportunity now through GMSV and Chevrolet Racing has definitely given me an opportunity to get back onto the dirt and have some fun.
Well, what's the expectations going to be? Like, you sort of know what the event's about, but it's something completely different to what you're used to.
Yeah, it is. It's more of a production class, so really for me it's about getting the Silverado down and back and hopefully setting some good times with Dale Moskett as my co-pilot. He's done it many a times, so he's very well experienced with the terrain and what the actual track is going to be all about. So that's going to be really exciting to have him alongside me. Since, as I said, this will be the third time in my career that I've actually race something with someone, with a passenger or with a navigator. So it's going to be a little bit different, but I'm really excited and testing's gone really well. So that's something that's, again, really positive to get back out there.
Silverado looks reasonably stock compared to some of the machinery out there. What's it like behind the wheel?
To be honest, it's been really interesting to be part of the program and the project, and really it was something that internally in GM, it was something that they wanted to do as sort of a staff engagement, and once the build got underway, it's really evolved from there, and truck itself has pretty much, you know, the stock style of it, actually very much based off the whole racing Silverado in the US. So thankfully we've got something to work off or a baseline to work from, and it really has evolved. You know, last couple of test days we've really sort of specced the truck up and put it through its paces to see what obviously it can handle and what it can control. So for me, again, it's just a great opportunity to get back out there and to showcase what GMSV is here in Australia. You know, over the last couple of years, obviously it's undertaken some name changes, but you know, they're here to stay and really a great way to showcase the product.
You mentioned it before, it's been a while since 2010 when you won the Australian Safari with Keys Wheels. What was that experience like back in the day?
Well, that was really exciting because I'd never done anything really, you know, competitively on dirt, and to have that opportunity with Keys and driving that back then, that was the Colorado, and you know, it was, you know, a huge experience for me. You do more kilometres in that sort of scenario than what you do mainly on a supercars weekend, so it was great, you know, for me in that regard. It was very different in the sense that you couldn't pre-run anything, you couldn't really you know, have an idea of what the terrain was all about. You literally got the booklet of directions and off you go. So for me, it's going to be a little bit similar with the Fink somewhat, because obviously you get a chance to pre-run the course, but with all the buggies and side-by-sides, motorbikes, you know, you talk to all the drivers and riders that have been through it in the past, it really doesn't you know, matter what you do early in the weekend. The whole track changes quickly, so you just got to drive to the conditions and what you see, and that's going to be very similar to what I had at the Safari.
So it's been a busy start to the year. Going back 2 weekends ago, you were there at the 12-hour, you paired with Cam Waters and Thomas Randall, and you guys were right in the thick of the battle until the finish there.
Yeah, we were. We did struggle a little bit with car pace, and that was something that we still try to pinpoint what it was. And when I say that, it was more straight lines speed. So we were about 6 kilometres down and on the other Mercedes AMG. So that's something that you know, we're still looking into. But first opportunity to drive with Cam and Thomas Randall, and I got to say that both were, you know, opened my eyes up a little bit to their personalities and what they're all about. Because normally I'm spending more of my time either now commentating on them or I used to compete against them. So to have the opportunity to share the car was really exciting. Thomas, I got to say, he kept the garage very much entertained. I think that was probably the easiest way to put it, with his unicycle and his harmonica and a few things that he sort of acquired over the course of the 3 or 4 days we were there.
Well, I said it on this podcast last week, you know, I was in awe of the silliness and good times that appear to be coming from the Scotty Taylor Motorsport guys. Like, I reckon that was the absolute perfect way to go motor racing.
Well, it was, and I think that, you know, again, motor racing, you take it very seriously, and you always want to win, and we did that as soon as we put our helmets on. But the atmosphere in the garage was exactly what we all needed. You know, Scotty Taylor is, you know, he owns the car. He put all of his effort into getting the car up and running again, and it was a real credit. You know, he just wants to go racing, have some fun, and I think the three of us brought that back for him as well. So that was a you know, a great opportunity and a great atmosphere. I think our signing sessions and everything else that we did, you know, was really entertaining. Every time that we got donations for the Prostate Cancer Foundation of Australia, you know, Thomas would be on the harmonica or serenading someone at some point. So it was a lot of fun. But as I said, it was a good cause for running the Prostate Cancer Foundation of Australia on the side of the car again. That's the fourth year we've done it now, to raise good funds and more so just the awareness of what we need to do, and when I say we, men need to do, to keep a check and an eye on what's going on.
And I suppose it's worth mentioning that the donations are still open there on the Prostate Cancer Foundation of Australia website. So awesome cause that you guys have been behind, and it's great that you're spreading the word and bringing awareness for something that blokes aren't very good at keeping on top of, I guess.
No, we're pretty good at putting our heads in the sand and not, I suppose, addressing some situations and issues. But for me, it's a huge importance because, you know, my brother, my older brother and my father have both been through it. So that puts me now at a high risk. So, yeah, it's just as easy as getting a blood test, keeping your eye on your PSA. And I've got to say, like, over the course of the weekend and also now, we're still getting people that are actually either come up and told me their stories, or they've on through socials have told stories of either they're going through it, or whether they've now thankfully caught it early and they can live on a healthy life. So it is really just as easy as a blood test. And that's something, again, for me, as I said, really important. I get it every year, and touch wood, it's all been positive. So, you know, again, just trying to get that awareness out there. And also, I do laugh a little because Lara always says that, you know, it's not also up to the men to do it, but the partners and their wives and mum, girlfriends, kicking their partners in the backside, literally, to go and get that blood test.
So it was a big doubleheader. Have you ever spent such a long period of time in Bathurst?
No, I think that was the, I suppose, unique situation. We actually drove down this year with the caravan, and we actually camped on track for the 2 weeks that we were there for the 12-hour and then the carryover at the start of the supercar season. So for us, it was literally, you know, almost sort of 15, 16 days away from home. And although it was great to have that opportunity to stay on track, but I've got to say, it's nice to be home. And I think the grass is growing, everything needs to be cleaned up. But it was an interesting, very unique start to a season to have a back-to-back like that. For the fans and the campers, I was quite amazed to see a lot of the campers that have actually blocked out that 2 week program to be able to see both going on, because they are very different elements and weekends when you've got European drivers and teams and sort of luxury cars racing one weekend, and then you start the season off with the supercars and the Mustangs and the Camaros.
It's a pretty good weekend for your friends at Triple A.
Yeah, they had a good run. You know, to be honest, in the 12-hour, we wanted to beat them because we were actually competing against Triple Eight. But I think that come the start of the championship, both Will Brown and Brock Feeney have kicked off the season very well. Will has fitted into the team extremely well. He was probably a little bit unlucky on the Saturday, you know, through the rotations of pit stops. He got elevated back to second, but, you know, Will, as I said, fitted in really, really well, and he went on to win on the Sunday. So he's definitely put a foot on the championship. So has Brock. And it was great to see the Mustangs, you know, up there with, you know, on the Saturday, Richie Stanaway having a great run, and then Chaz Mostert on the Sunday. So, you know, they're not too far away, I think, from cracking that win, and I think that'll be really important, especially the next round when we go to the Melbourne Grand Prix.
So, looking forward to October, you'll be lining up once again the Super Cheap Auto Wildcard this year alongside Cooper Murray. And I've got to say, that launch video with Super Cheap Auto spokesperson Nathan Murray, that was incredibly well done.
Thank you. It was a lot of fun, and to have Cooper come up to the workshops, he'd never been to Triple Eight before, and to basically thrust him into that side of it and doing the smiling and the cheering and having, you know, sort of a bit of fun with it, tongue in cheek. That was a lot of fun for us, and to show him around the workshop, which he was really excited about it. And I know he had a tough weekend at Bathurst, but he did put it on pile on Saturday. So he's got great speed. He's a great young kid. And program's working. I think that's, it's great to have Superchip again on board the race car. And, you know, our next test day, or when Triple Eight go testing next, will be part of that with our wildcard car. And that's, again, you know, to have that program running with, you know, started with Declan Fraser for me, and then Zane last year, and now Cooper this year. It really a great opportunity for the young guys to get involved, to show them what actually goes on in the sense of the high level profile and the pressure. And I think that's what it's all about. And I hope Cooper sort of uses this as a bit of a springboard up to bigger and better things.
Well, CL, thanks for your time, and we're looking forward to seeing how you go at the Fink.
Yeah, no worries. I'm looking forward to it as well. I think it's no doubt I'll be out of my comfort zone, but you know, you've got to do that every now and then. I'm really looking forward to showcasing what the Silverado can do.
There's more great motorsport stories coming next on The Grid.
All right, at Bathurst, Dale Rogers was part of a media scrum that spoke to the driver of the Ford Supertruck, Romain Dumas, and this is what he had to think about driving this electric vehicle that now holds the fastest time for a closed vehicle at Mount Panorama. what it was like to drive this vehicle around the Great Mountain.
Where would you like to go, Robin?
That's a good question. I mean, don't forget that the base, it's a, I mean, it was done for Bikes Peak, you know? I mean, what we achieve here, if you ask already last week, you saw we had some issue with the power steering. Luckily, a lot of people were involved to find a solution. And still, on my first lap, the steering was sometimes a little bit hard, you know? So, because when it was never done to go at this speed on a straight, you know, to go at this, like we are doing today. I mean, a lot of small things, you know, like the windscreen was bending and things like that, because it was never designed for that. You know? So, if you are thinking Nürburgring, you know, it's a long straight. So, we have to think about and work on it for sure.
But how much was left in it, Ramon?
Really? So, it's funny, you possibly not believe it, but this morning we went a lot faster than what we expect. I always said we should go around 59. That was true. On the sim, we were driving 58, 57i. And this morning we were a lot faster. Unfortunately, we didn't have any more new tires for this afternoon or for now. So we just try. But I was sliding a lot. So I think with four new tires could be a little bit faster. But you know, the trick here, or the difficulty here is for sure that the driver, on top of that, you know, it's not a small car, you know, it's so you need laps to get the confidence, and it starts to be, for me, also quicker and quicker. We work a lot. I mean, you see, this thing is so impressive. Also, I can tell you to go over the crest in sector one and stay flat. You need some laps. So it was, yeah, but it was good. It was
what
good.
Speed is it doing over the hump?
You have to ask the chef. You know?
So over 300 is all I was going to say.
Yeah. On the hump, on mountain straight.
No, going up the hill.
300
both.
Plus.
Both are 300 plus.
Yep. So to go over this crest at this so speed, you say you feel your heart a little bit.
Mark, can I go back to why set a lap record at Bathurst? Why did you come here with the van?
That's a special track.
Okay.
Right? And yep. And like Romain said, it was built for Pikes Peak, which was a mission very much there because of the spectacle that it is. And in many ways, this is similar to that. It's a mountain. It is a spectacle. Great fans here, tells a great story. We didn't know that the AMG was going to come here last week and do their lap, so that gave us a target to go for sure. But yeah, it's a very special track.
How satisfying is it to beat Mercedes? Is this a precursor to a Formula One battle in a couple of years?
Well, we're in motorsports to compete with manufacturers, right? Yeah. So, of course, doing a lap record, no matter who it is, to get a lap record is a big deal for us.
And how much tech transfer? There's a lot of smart people with this van. How much tech transfer, or what is it, a training ground for road-going EVs or competition EVs or for F1? How does that tech transfer
work? Both. So it is the electrified powertrain technology, but it's also the total vehicle and other things that affect those road cars like aerodynamics.
Yes.
So when you have aerodynamics expertise, here you're not as concerned about drag. It is, of course, important, but you care a lot about downforce. But just having the smart people, aerodynamicists, Sri was formerly one before he came into this manager job. Still is one mentally. Formerly an aerodynamicist. Anyway, always an aerodynamicist, right? Yeah. But you train those people and you better your tools so that you can then apply that to road cars. And sometimes you apply it in a different way, but it's still the processes that matter. And for electric vehicles on the road, it isn't as much about the downforce, but it's about low drag. And the more that you can take drag out of it, that means the smaller you can make your battery or the more you can extend your range, so the customers want to buy your vehicle if you've got an advantage from it, right? It's a smart way to get range without putting a bigger battery in.
I'm guessing you're not here just to be a cheerleader for Roman and the Sri and the rest of the guys. You seem to have been in a lot of meetings. What was your mission in coming here this weekend?
Well, it comes together very well, right? We've got a lot of programs going on, and as soon as I knew that we'd be here with Superman 4.2 and with the start of the supercar season, it lines up for benefit for both.
What's the benefit for Ford in being here? Why have you been? Have you been
to be a cheerleader for Romain?
you're quoting me back. You get no points for that.
He found an extra second.
That I feel more pressure.
No. Oh, of course.
You're clever, you know.
No, to me, like the demonstrator, the Superman 4.2, just that is a big deal, having that here.
Yeah.
And where what we do with our teams, right? Having these five great teams here with 10 cars on track to be here to support them in terms of what they're putting on track, with the new, with the body changes, with the new aero map, to make sure we've got the proper support for them, and then of course continuing to work with supercars to make sure we're doing the right things as a sport together, to have great racing and a strong future for the sport.
So you're happy with Mustang 4.0, if you want to call it?
Mustang.
Sure, it is. It's the fourth version of the Gen 3 car.
That is a fair way to describe it, yeah.
Are you happy with where it's at now, or do you want more?
Aero-wise?
No, overall.
Overall? We still need to keep looking at all the data, right? We don't want to jump to conclusions from the data that we've seen so far, from the on-track performance that we've seen so far. As you said, it's version 4.0 with a Mustang.
Yeah.
And it takes time for the teams to come to grips with that new aero map and making sure they're optimizing that setup. But we're obviously looking at all the data that we have available closely to see where we really stack up.
Do you think you can be championship contenders this year?
Absolutely.
So Chaz in the press conference yesterday said that he thinks there's a bit more to do, like the aero stuff's awesome, a bit more to do on the aero engine front. Is that so you're
completely agree with that? So we know that the processes that are here today, or that were in supercars historically leading up to this, we knew that aero wasn't sufficient, and it's great that supercars has embraced that now and gone to wind shear, to a controlled test, with a process that's aligned with both manufacturers, with both homologation teams, and we believe we've got a good outcome there. We've said from day one, from 3 years ago, that AEP, using the dyno that's available here, is not sufficient, especially when you get to two different engines, different displacement, different architecture, the transient response is going to be different. So it may look the same, AEP may say it's the same, it doesn't mean it is the same. And we've certainly seen that in terms of the engine that we had last year, even the engine with improvements that have been made to the engine, still measures the same AEP, but it still races differently. And the ultimate goal is a proper transient dyno, which now there is a commitment that that testing will happen, so we can characterize the two different engines on there. I expect that we will see differences there that we did not see on the dyno here, but then we've got to be prepared to make those changes there and bring them back onto the racetrack.
And how big is a difference, or how satisfied are you since the move from, I guess, Herod to the DJR, the engine program? That sounds like a big progress there.
Yeah, there's certainly progress there. There's nothing negative about Herod and everything that they have done. And like I said, the processes in the series are currently with AEP limit us and limited what we were able to do. Some of those things were opened up, still restricted by AEP. And DJR was maybe able to make some improvements from that.
Is your gripe with the processes, or is your gripe?
I wouldn't call it a gripe.
Right. Is the shortcoming with respect to AEP the process and the dyno, or the concept and the metric?
It's when you race a car on track, the engine, it's a very transient state, right? As you go through different conditions, through gear changes, with the dyno that's used here as part of AEP, it's just a watt throttle. Right, just at watt, do a sweep, that is what it is. That's not how an engine performs on track. So it's actually representing more closely, not exactly, but more closely, how an engine actually performs on the track.
So should AEP be scrapped as the benchmark, or have something else added into the mix as a parity benchmark?
We'll learn more from the AVL dyno, but I expect that we will learn that AVL picks up differences that AEP doesn't, and therefore I would want the process aligned with that.
So do you have a timing on that yet? When that testing's going to occur?
You'd have to ask supercars.
Yeah. So do we have technical parity as we stand here today?
We don't know, right? Honestly, right? Because...
But that's a no. If you don't know, then it must be a no.
The way the series defines it with aero...
Yes.
Yes, we do. The way the series defines it with AEP, they would say... Yes, using that historical process. But when we go on the AVL, then we will really find out.
Can technical parity ever be truly achieved between a 5.7-litre pushrod versus a 5.4?
Can? We'll find out. I mean, this is the only series that does that, right? Because other series, if you look at NASCAR, it's technical rules, you build to it, you go race. There's no parity other than the the rules say this is the displacement that you need to use, this is the bore spacing that you need to use. So there is parity by rules, and then you play within those rules, and you can get some different power differences, and that's the nature and aspect. All the sports car racing series in the world are using BOP, which is very different than technical parity. So it's a unique situation that this series has because of what it is. And it's great in many ways to have technical parity, but it puts the emphasis on the people and the processes of the series to be able to truly enable delivering technical parity.
Is Tim Edwards' new role with Supercars useful because he was clearly experiencing the issues from a Ford perspective last year as a team manager at Tickford?
Whether or not his direct experience in Tickford, I don't know that that's as relevant as who he is as a person. His experience in total, even before Tickford, certainly comes into play, right? So I think Tim is a great person, a great engineer. He's come in here with a lot of experience and fresh eyes, right, to bring into supercars from all that experience.
Are you looking forward to spending less time worrying about supercars this year with all the other stuff you have on?
We'll find out in the next couple of months.
When does supercars have to be sorted and you can be satisfied that there's technical parity?
I don't know that there's a hard date.
Does that mean as long as it takes?
Well, obviously there's going to be a limit at some point, right? If we're here 3 years from now, that's probably a little bit too long.
Okay, so let's agree.
But it's a journey, right? I mean, we've been on this journey since we committed to Gen 3, whenever, 3 years ago, 4 years ago now. And there's continual progress through all of that, and I'm glad the arrow is settled now and we can move on, but we need to move quickly on the engine.
So, part. Jamie Leacup said last week that maybe the future of supercars should be GT3 cars. He did say it, yes.
I didn't know that, but okay.
No. Anyway, you don't know all about crap stuff, I understand that. But he did say that maybe they would look at another way and GT3 is possible. Would you prefer to see Gen 4 be GT3?
I think it's too early to tell. I think GT3 is a fantastic category that is working very well in IMSA and WEC and SRO and VLN and everywhere around the world. And it's great that we can design, build, develop one car and sell it in all those different markets and all those different series. There is something very unique about supercars, right? The fact what these cars are, it's different than GT3. If we can get to true technical parity, why not continue with this? If we can't, maybe GT3 is a good option. Or maybe the NASCAR.
NASCAR would be the cheapest one, wouldn't it?
It's there. Why not? If you think about the number, if you were to actually compare, I can't tell you what the costs are, but if you compare the cost to build a supercar versus a NASCAR,
NASCAR's a lot cheaper.
You should go find out what those numbers are. But if you think about it, right, how many Gen 3 supercars have been built? How many NASCARs have been built, cup cars, right? If you think at any point in time, any car number has 7 chassis, and there's 40 cars, that's times 7. That's a lot more than, so just the
economies of scale.
Exactly.
All right, last questions, guys.
How about some for these
can
guys?
Can I ask a minor question? can I ask, the guys talked about, and you talked about building up confidence. What are the areas that you needed to change other than, you mentioned the steering, in confidence around an electric vehicle around that panorama?
I mean, you know, an electric vehicle who is done for Pikes Peak, and anyway, you know, when we designed or created this car, it was to do 20 kilometers.
Yes.
Pikes Peak is 20 kilometers. So at the end of the day, you go out, you do one flying lap, you do another one, and it's finished. You all saw that. We stop after 2 or 3 laps. So all the driver here, they need laps to, you know, to feel the track, to see how you settle the car, how you turn, how you do. And this was the biggest challenge, you know, to do. Even if we are here for 2 weeks, if you look, each day we are doing 3-4 laps. So if you're counting how many laps we are doing compared to GT3.
70 kilometers in total.
So, you know, it's not much. So it's why it's a challenge, you know, for the driver. And to push yourself also. I'm sure if we stay, we go again faster because... But it's the same in Pikes Peak. You have only 3 shots and after it's a race day. So
you're listening to the latest from around the motorsport world. On the Grid.
All right, and join me as normal. Well, normally we have Richard Quayle here, but he's on a sabbatical at the moment up on the Gold Coast. Mark Walker, g'day to you.
G'day, Tony Shebeki. I think he's working.
But he always works, doesn't he? Our Richard, he's always bloody working. He can't
he's a hard
get enough.
Worker.
Now he's working so hard he can't even do a podcast. So
yeah,
well, we've got to save some knots up. So we'll save that for later.
Yeah, no, exactly. Save that one up. You of course went to Bathurst. Is it the right thing to do to have the opening round at your best track?
I think not. I think it's hard to describe. I don't know what the expectation was. Because for mine, the expectation was probably what we got there in the weekend.
Yeah.
Because it's just a hard thing to back up, especially after the 12-hour. And it's especially hard to back up the place where you've got the Bathurst 1000.
Yeah.
Anything you put on there in comparison is going to look rubbish. And it probably looked rubbish on the weekend, and a lot of people have rightly teed off about it. But I reckon that's probably about what they were going to get. There were people there. There were campers there. I think if you transplanted that sort of crowd into a standard venue, it would look pretty decent. But because Mount Panorama's used to holding 50,000 people, when you don't have 50,000 people there, it looks rubbish. So, the vibe was clearly not as good as what you're going to get at a Newcastle or an Adelaide to kick off the season. And frankly, the season probably deserves something big to kick it off. You know, there's probably value in having this at Sydney Motorsport Park. If you put on some big concerts or something there to get people out of the woodworks to go to Sydney Motorsport Park, have it under lights Friday, Saturday night in summer, I think you'd probably get a few people along. You would have got all the dads along who sent their kids off to Taylor Swift on the weekend.
That's true. It's only down the road, isn't it, from where Taylor Swift was?
But, I think they've got to do something different for next year. They can't let that happen. I think the six Bathurst thing was just too much. And it's not fair to that round having it back up straight after the 12-hour. That was such a huge thing.
Were there a lot of tired people there?
Oh, there were. Yeah, I think so.
Well, I mean, the people who had worked for the weekend of the 12-hour and then had to back up again for Bathurst.
I'll burn a hot right now. I think well done to the officials, because I was very sceptical that they would get a quorum of officials there to run the thing safely, but they had two officials on all the flag points. They didn't necessarily have all the floating sector marshals that you normally would, you know, going in between that you would at the 1000. So it wasn't as well staffed as that, but they were able to get it done safely, which I think was a very commendable effort, because it's a big ask for those officials, especially with this relatively thrown in late, because we knew that the 12-hour was going to happen that weekend before. And then to have this chucked up on top, it's a big commitment to either go home for a few days and then transport yourself all the way back out to Bathurst, or burn a week of your holidays sitting there in between. So a good job by all those officials that made it a thing that happened.
A good job by Triple Eight. They're showing its ascendancy again.
They're back, aren't they?
Yeah.
They're back. I mean, it was the first race last year, first weekend last year at Newcastle. It was a similar result, except for the fact that they got disqualified from the Saturday race. I mean, they dominated there, they've dominated here, but the vibe coming out of them this weekend is 180 degrees the other way, isn't it? There's none of that negativity that Shane picked up over that weekend that sort of snowballed into him deciding to go and do other things this year. But they got two drivers who are absolutely on board, and clearly it hasn't taken Will very long to bet in there. I mean, he's leading the championship after the first round. So, if we thought that Brock was going to have things all his own way, that's absolutely not the case. And obviously everything's just worked out very nicely there for Will slotting in there. I think they complement each other very nicely. They work together well. They get along well. We'll see how long that lasts. If they keep biffing it on for the later these races, that's the sort of thing that can put a bit of a strain on relationships. But they were awesome on the weekend. They really did a good job. You know, Chaz came out after the first race and was banging on about parity, which I think was probably a bit early to do that, because he should have probably won that race on Sunday. He was leading most of the way. He got the good start from the outside row of the grid, which is exactly where you want to be at Bathurst. Apparently, most of the people who started second led into the first corner all weekend long, and Chaz was out there and was doing a really good job until that last round of pit stops where they got overtaken and wound up losing the race by a second. So I don't think there's a lot in there. And clearly Chaz was the best of the rest on the weekend. He did a really nice job there in the Mobil 1 Optus Mustang.
Yeah, but I was going to say other winners were WAU, of course, with Chaz Mostert and Tickford as well. showed a bit of a sort of a resurgence?
Tommy did there on Sunday with a fourth, but Cam Waters was nowhere in the weekend. It was really weird. You know, we expected him to be absolutely at the top of the pops, but Cam was a bit absent on the weekend, which was very unusual. Other winners from the weekend, I mean, the Newlon Premier guys showed some speed, especially James Golding with fifth on Sunday. Their Saturday race was an absolute Barry Crocker from the start. They were last and second last at the end of the first lap, but come Sunday, they got some good points on the board. Richie Stanaway was great. He was in the fence early in the weekend, but bounced back to be P4 in the standings with a fourth and an 11th for the weekend. So Richie did a really stout job as well. But I think the real surprise packet there was Matt Stone Racing. You know, Cam Hill was a personal best fifth on Saturday, which was sensational. And Nick Percat looked like Nick Percat of old. Like that was exactly where we used to expect him to be in the Brad Jones days. And he can still do it, which is fantastic. You know, you look at the live pit lane, they're going to be in garage three at the Grand Prix.
That's true.
They're up there batting with the big dogs.
Because we have the live garages,
You look at the other end of the scale, Dick Johnson Racing, for whatever reason, they showed some pace in some areas there, getting cars and shootouts and whatnot, but they didn't necessarily get the race results falling their way. They're going to be in the second last garage. Dick Johnson
Racing. Been a while since they've been there.
Oh, they've never been there. So that's, probably not since, 2013, before Chaz came on board sort of thing. So, there were winners and losers all around. The racing probably wasn't the spiciest it's ever been. You know, they went the hard tyres and that didn't seem to fix the problems that we had at the 1000 with the racing there, which gives them something to think about moving forward, because all it really did was slow down the qualifying pace. There were no big superstar numbers in the shootout and qualifying. So something for them to think about there. You know, those races, they would have been completely different had they had safety cars late.
Yeah.
That would have saved everything. You have one good finish and that saves a race. You can have a bit of mediocre, you know, first 200 Ks, but if you have an absolute barnstormer last 50 Ks, that would change everything. And it just didn't happen on the weekend. You know, Cam Waters lost a tire on Saturday Arvo. It's like, here we go. Here comes the safety car. And they threw a full course yellow, of course, which let them retrieve that tire. So that could have absolutely changed things. But unfortunately, that Saturday race, it started under safety car and it ended under safety car. So that was a complete knot from that perspective. You know, you wanted to start out with a good race to get things going and it just didn't happen for them. So that's a bit of a shame. They'll have a heap of races at Melbourne to try and rebound and get the season going.
Yeah, no, exactly. Support categories, did I? And of course, I was at the World Superbikes in Phillip Island, so I didn't get a chance to watch everything throughout the weekend. But did I see you guys say the Super 2s went full Super 2 again?
Oh, they went harder Super 2 than anything that's ever gone Super 2.
Really?
Ever. Like Saturday, they had a 40-minute race that didn't get one lap completed.
No.
It was either safety car or red flag. She was an absolute debacle. So that went absolute Super 2. No points from that one. They got a few racing laps in on Saturday, but there was still a very messy affair there. I think Cooper Murray is probably the big loser out of that. He was blotto on both days. Winding up in the fence, which was a shame for Cooper, but they'll live to fight another day. But that was a really scrappy affair from the Super 2 guys on the weekend. The rest of it was actually pretty competent. The Super Utes were fairly wild. TCMs.
How did the Johnson Crowell Aussie Racing car go, or do you want to save that for hots and nots?
No, they were competent. Their first learning weekend out there, they Donk a little bit down on power and was overheating a bit in the last race, so they didn't necessarily have the straight line sniff, which is what you want there. But
did I see a 13th in one of the races or something?
Yeah. Ashley did a good job. Got screwed in qualifying when they called the session short, and they lost a race on Saturday when there was a massive oil down, so they caused a half hour delay in the program, which they took out on them later on in the day and just removed their race. So, still good racing there. Hopefully that they can find some coin and go and do some good things later on the season, because there's some tracks coming up that will really suit Asher and that car. It looks absolutely first class and it's got some beautiful Race Talk stickers on it, but I'm sure the lads will gladly nick them off and put your logo there.
If need be.
Oh, just
if
do it.
If need be, for sure. All right, so all in all, a good weekend.
Competent.
Okay.
It,
6 out of 10?
Yeah, 6.25, I reckon.
Yeah.
It was okay. Yeah, just don't do it again. And especially like when you've got the Bathurst 6 hour coming up and you've got, I talked to a fair few of officials there on the weekend because you just do, downtime between sessions and, you know, they're all hyped up about the 6 hour because the massive fields across the board, the 6 hour's got over 60 entries and then all the supports as well have really big entries and it's a lot more relaxed, it's chilled out. And I think a lot of people are looking forward to that. So, yeah, I hope supercars, New South Wales government, everyone can find a solution that works out. We don't have to do that again.
Well, I had a big weekend down at Phillip Island. World Superbikes were down there. And it went full Phillip Island. Friday, it absolutely pelted down and the wind was blowing and it was just absolutely freezing. The new track resurfaced at Phillip Island. So as a result, the bikes had to come in during their race halfway to do a tyre change between laps 9 and 11 out of a 20-lap race because the tyres were just getting absolutely slaughtered.
Right. So it looked like a decent crowd, the photos.
Oh, no, great crowd. Really good crowd. And some really competent racing, especially in the Australian Superbikes and the Australian Supersport and the Supersport 300. The Australian categories just put on an amazing show, but so did the guys from overseas. And Nicolò Bulliger winning the first race, and then Alex Lowes taking the sprint race, effectively, yep. I think, and the Super Pole race is what I'm looking for, and then winning the second race in the afternoon. So we had in the Australian Superbikes, which was the last category before World Supersport and then World Superbikes, in the Australian Superbikes, we had one rider who blew a seal on his oil filter and dropped a litre and a half, that's all there was in his tank, a litre and a half of oil from the end of turn one all the way through to turn two, into going out of turn two as well. That took about an hour and 15 minutes to clean up. So both the super sport race and the super bike race were reduced to half distance, effectively. Oh. It was just, no good.
No good. Oil downs, hard knot. We'll lock that in now.
Yeah, we'll lock that in for sure. Exactly right. But no, otherwise, and I'll give a hot later on to the people involved in the superbikes. But otherwise, a very competent event, no doubt, and a really good crowd.
I suppose the thing we've got to look forward to now, Formula One's this weekend. Yay, hey, Formula One's back. And I can't believe that Max has already won the championship. That's amazing.
They're giving him the trophy.
Yeah, the stats from 3 days of testing last week in Bahrain, where they're racing this weekend, is that the Red Bulls were 0.2 of a second faster in both qualifying and race trim per lap. Right. So that's something to think about there. But Max is happy. He's very happy with the car, and he's clearly got good pace. And I think the whole paddock knows exactly what's going to happen there. But two Saturday races to kick things off, which for us here in Australia mean, I think it's about a 2 a.m. start this Sunday morning, and I think it's about a 4 a.m. start the following week.
Absolutely so spot on.
Absolutely rubbish if you're an Australian Formula One fan. But then I guess round three is at Albert Park. And good luck getting a ticket to that because you're not going to get one.
No, exactly. The Saudi Arabian Grand Prix, is that race at the Jebediah track? Has that got something to do with the Simpsons or something?
I believe so. Think so. No, that's a wipe. But that should be, it'll be interesting to see where everything pans out. I think looking at the testing time, the form guide from last year is pretty similar to what we've got this year. The RBs, Daniel Ricciardo, actually looked pretty fast. He was in the top five on the last 2 days overall. So, but you never know with testing because they're all running different programs, different initiatives, different car setups, different tyres. I mean, the Red Bulls weren't the fastest overall. That was the two Ferraris, but they were using a soft compound that won't be used this weekend. So it was a bit of a false economy there, looking at that in the timesheet, thinking that the Ferraris are absolutely blinding quick. They were pretty quick overall in qualifying trim, but not really that good when you delve into the stats. So it'll all play out this weekend. Two Aussies out there in what should be a competitive position. So,
what do you think is going to happen with Lewis Hamilton and Mercedes? How's that going to look this year?
Yes,
I understand they're both professional team, professional driver. They'll get through it, but there's got to be some sort of angst there, doesn't there?
It has to be. It has to be. And I mean, how's Carlos going to go at Ferrari in his lame duck season? The team's going to give their all to these drivers who are gone. Like, it's an awkward situation, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, sometimes these silly season things play out August, September. Then you've only got to hold on for the last few rounds when your fate's already sealed. But here we are with 23 races, whatever it is that we're running this year, and they've got to stay professional throughout, which is going to be interesting. And there's going to be a lot of chat, obviously, about what Carlos does. Where does he wind up? That's going to be a really big talking point, because I think there's only about four or five guys who have locked in seats for next season. So the silly season has a lot to play out, and there's going to be a lot of movements, you would think.
100%, there certainly will be. Where were the NASCARs this weekend?
They were in Hotlanta, Atlanta Motor Speedway. They reconfigured that in the recent years, and it's now pretty much a high-speed, stripped-up race like you'd think you'd have at Daytona or Talladega. It acts as a drafting race, so pack racing. There's two sides to that. So the first race was the Xfinity Series, and we're sitting there in the media center at Bathurst doing some work and flick on social media. Well done, Shane Van Gisbergen, third. What on earth? How is that? Second ever Xfinity race, third.
Yeah, crazy.
It was legit. Like, he was in the fight. He would have finished top 10. It wound up being a fuel race late. He dived in, got a gulp of fuel to get him to the line. A heap of cars ran out of gas. He didn't take that chance to go in. So he was there. He was right in the photo at the finish. He was only a couple car lengths off winning his second ever Xfinity race. But he was stout throughout. He was absolutely in the mix. He came and went, and he did an awesome job. So for him to do that this early is incredible. He beat his teammates. I mean, his teammates have the same car as him. You know, the Cowlick stuff is good equipment. It's good Chevy kit that wins races, and he's done a great job so far. He's ninth in the championship, which I think is an incredibly commendable effort. The flip side to that is that...
Well, the thing with that, though, Mark, is before you get into the flip side, the thing with that is no one in Australia is surprised.
Oh, I think you have to be a little bit surprised. Oh, I mean, we knew he could drive and he's a freak, but for him to just do that straight off the bat is very interesting.
Yeah.
The flip side to it is that there's a bit of a squeeze on for seats next year. So obviously, he's going over there with the aim to get a cup drive, and he's signed on with Trackhouse Racing, which they run the cars for Ross Chastain, who's seemingly signed up for a fairly long time at that team because he's got the Busch beer backing, and he's got a lot of support behind him. He's got scores on the board. He's finished second in the championship overall in the past. So he's pretty much a lock. The person who was under pressure was Daniel Suarez, the Mexican driver, who won a race a couple of years ago, got into the playoffs, but last year really battled. And this year he was on the chopping block. Like, if he didn't get a win, he was going to be in a lot of trouble in that seat. And Trackhouse has a lineup of drivers, Zane Smith and SVG, looking to crack it into that main team.
Yeah.
So what does Suarez do? He goes out and wins the race. So that absolutely throws a spanner in the works. Yeah, they've got SVG doing awesome, but they're going to be stuck with where to put him now. So that's going to be interesting to see how that silly season plays out. The cup race was incredible. If you've never watched a NASCAR race before, that's probably one to go and watch, because it was really racy stuff. Where everyone in the industry, all the drivers, they're all raving about how good it was. And it all came down to a five-lap sprint to the finish. It wound up being the closest three-wide finish in the history of NASCAR Cup Series, with Suarez, Ryan Blaney and Kyle Busch three-wide across the line, split by 0.007. Oh. And it was the third closest finish in Cup Series history at 0.003 between Suarez and Blaney, which is just ludicrous. So really good stuff. And NASCAR's on a bit of a crest at the moment because the Netflix stuff has done wonders for them, like Drive to Survive has for Formula One. So they've got a lot of support there. And if people have tuned in out of curiosity for these first 2 weeks, they've had two absolute crackers. So the NASCAR circus rolls off to Las Vegas this weekend. And I believe that's about the best time slotted motorsport you're going to see this weekend, is SVG's race at about 8:30 Sunday morning.
Yeah, absolutely perfect timing for us, no doubting that. That pretty much covers everything that's happening at the moment. Might be time to get into our Caltex Techron Hots and Knots.
So standing hot this week goes to Reckless Brewing. I know we bang on a bit about their kit, but...
And in case people are wondering, we do not have any ownership of this brewery. We have a love of the brewery.
No, the love extends to the fact that they sponsored the Johnston & Crail Racing Enterprises Aussie Racing Car on the weekend.
Well, we still loved it anyway.
But here's the fun fact. No matter how much BX Lager you consume, you will never, ever get a hangover. And I am living proof of that. Yeah. They wound up having stickers on a lot of race cars over the weekend. They're on the Erebus cars. And their stuff, and they're going well. Breweries aren't necessarily doing a roaring trade at the moment, but the guys at Reckless Brewing have their stuff for sale in bottle shops, Victoria, New South Wales, Queensland. So they're getting around. It's really, really good stuff. So get behind those who get behind motorsport and get behind us. So they sponsored us. That's so awesome. Hot goes to the National Motor Racing Museum. They've got a special Mopar exhibit
standing
on
hot.
At the moment.
Standing hot.
Oh, it's just the best. You take it for granted, but you go in there and it is so rad. They've got so many cool Mopar bits of kit on the moment. They've got Jason White's Targa Tasmania Viper, which is just the most ludicrous thing you've ever seen in your life. So if you're in the Bathurst general area, that is well and truly worth checking out. Taylor Swift, hot. Just a statement of fact there.
Yeah. Hottest thing in the world, I think.
On this, according to TikTok, which is the source of all facts on the internet, the weekend before last, when she was in Melbourne, apparently went to the Dandenong markets.
No,
so there's every guy. It might have been complete bollocks, but it was on TikTok, so I think it's fact.
I thought Travis Kelce might have come to the Bathurst 500 on the weekend.
You would have hoped so. I mean, you probably would have seen him in the crowd. He would have stood out, I reckon.
Yeah, 100%.
But yeah, Tay-Tay, she might have actually gone to the Vic State race at Sandown. That's on the way to the Dandenong markets.
Good point.
But I'm guessing that the Sandown security probably would have botched that. So
yeah. Would she have needed a pass, do you reckon?
You need a lot of things to get into that racetrack with that security in place. Hot goes to the Tickford runaway tyre clip on social media. Tom Rattenbury does that stuff and absolutely knocks it out of the park. And they didn't necessarily win on track, but they're winning on the internet. Well done, Tickford. That Ford electric supervan 4.2.
Oh, how quick.
Oh, bloody hell.
Wow.
Holy schmolies. it was doing 300 Ks an hour at the start of Conrod. So they didn't show the speedo at the end, but oh my word. If that's what electric car racing is going to be, if they put a field of those out there, that would just be the most ridiculous thing you've ever seen.
And just some makeup noise coming through the speakers in the stereo.
They make a rad noise.
Oh, do they?
It was awesome.
Is it like a vacuum on steroids?
It's like if you wanted to get your whole house vacuumed in 0.1 of a second. Like if you wanted to suck the tiles up and it's pretty hectic. But well done to Ford because they tipped a lot into that and they went very hard with that. And they did a fair bit of work to the car, or the van as it is. It's huge. It's like you think a transit van. I don't know if transit vans are that big, but this thing's bloody massive. So
could revolutionise the courier movement.
Yeah, so I think it's still doing a few more stops like the Adelaide Festival there coming up.
We'll deliver your parcel in under 5 minutes, otherwise it's free.
Oh, it'll go through your front door sideways at 300 k's an hour. Fantastic. One final hot from me, Shebex. Kyle Busch, he finished third in the cup race at Atlanta and got on the socials afterwards and said, can't get much closer than that. Only needed a couple of inches. To which his wife and dead set legend, Samantha Bush, replied, I've been telling you that for almost 20 years. I love NASCAR. How good is
that? That is good. My smoking hot wife.
Oh, fantastic.
That is fantastic. A couple of hots from me. Brewery, if I may. And I know Reckless Brewery is our mob, but Grand Ridge Brewery, who support the World Superbikes at Phillip Island, have for the last few years. Fantastic that, once again, a small brewing company is getting involved in motor racing in a big way. I mean, they pump a little bit of money into it, and they actually had a special World Superbikes can, World Superbike Lager, that they were selling over the weekend. So a nice little collector's item. So well done to them. Well done to breweries getting into motor racing.
100%.
And great work by Dorna as well. I've got to really congratulate these guys. They run both categories, the MotoGP and also the World Superbikes. And they have a staff of, there would have been at least a staff of 90 there for their TV production and all of their officials and the like. They just do a really, really good job. They understand motorbikes, they understand the people that support the motorbike industry, and they just really cater for them. So well done to Dorna.
Yeah, good show. Just a couple of knots from me this week. First of all, we've of course got to knot Richard Crail, but it's not for not being here. People are busy. They've got to do stuff. It happens. But last week, we recorded the episode of On the Grid after he left his mates at the pub. He was mid-sesh, left them to come to record the podcast with us. He promised to return. He never returned. He stood up his mates at the pub, which is unforgivable in my books. And that was not nice, Richard. Don't do that again.
He's got to be better than that.
Yeah, you got to be better than that. Secondly, and I don't know if this is hot or not, but Joey Logano was disqualified from qualifying at Atlanta. Disqualified from qualifying? That's a combination of words, isn't it? Because he had web gloves, which seemingly he held up to the window net to block air coming in the window during qualifying, essentially as an aerodynamic cheat. Like it's
web gloves,
like race gloves, but they put a bit of webbing in between the fingers.
So it was like he had duck feet on his hands.
Yeah, duck feet on his hands, blocked the window up and gave him a good qualifying time because he didn't let any air in the car as an aerodynamic cheat. Yeah, brilliant engineering, but a bit of a tool bag move if they thought they were going to get away with it. Like, that's a knot. What an idiot. And that's my knots for the week.
No, that'll do. I don't actually have any knots apart from oil falling on tracks and holding up events.
Yep. Fair it's cop. Just,
yeah, exactly. But apart from that, that's it. Mate, we'll wrap it up. Well done.
Good chat.
Yeah, have great a chat, next week. As always. Hopefully, the three of us will be back together next week. And in the meantime, should I throw to Richard?
Oh, no.
I'm getting back for what he did to me 2 weeks ago.
He was just hell-bent on doing that to you. Sorry about that, Jamex.
That's all right. I'm not that low. Thanks for joining us. We'll join you again next week right here on The Grid.